So what have you found out about yourself at this point?
Well, and also I found out a lot about myself in the course of doing this podcast. Are you at all concerned that younger generations appear to be fighting for almost the same things that you fought for?
Well, I think we've made progress on those issues. Any last thought on what I guess maybe you'd like other generations to understand about your generation that maybe they don't?
I really like that question.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational podcast about female power, what it looks like, why it's important, and what we can all do to claim our power and put it to work individually and collectively. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders.
And I'm Monica Doyle, the millennial voice of this podcast, along with other things. I'm Ann's niece and part of the Doyle family, our very large family. The topic today is going to be a little different than usual. Instead of interviewing guests, we figured we would interview each other a little bit so you could get to know us a little better.
Right. A couple months back, Monica, you had mentioned that you had some questions for me. And as we've started doing this podcast together, I've discovered things about my niece that I never knew that are pretty intriguing. So I thought maybe our listeners might be interested in getting to know a little bit more about what makes each of us tick. So how about if you start things off, Monica, and then I'll get my chance to ask you questions.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I really wanted to do with, you know, you and I talking to each other like this is just kind of rehash conversations that we've had before in private, because you and I have a lot of political conversations that I find very valuable. But the first big question I really wanted to ask was, what was your biggest goal of this podcast? Like, what was it that made you know that it was your job to make a podcast, to talk to people, to put these voices out there?
Okay. Well, actually, it was my son, Kevin, your cousin, who was the one who really put the bug in my ear about doing a podcast, because I actually had been working on a second book. And I was starting to do the research, and, you know, books take a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd talk to Kevin about it every now and then. But Kevin said to me, you know, Mom, you really shouldn't write another book, because one of my goals was really to reach millennials. And he said to me, you know, millennials aren't reading as many books. They're listening to podcasts. And at that time, I really didn't know very much about podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, podcast, schmodcast, what, you know? But when I started doing the research and everything, it really blew my mind. And particularly in terms of the millennial generation. And the other generations are catching up. But once I realized how powerful that was, and I have this whole background as a broadcast 15 years in radio and television, that I thought, wow, yeah. And I started listening to podcasts, and so that was it, really. I mean, that's what made me do a podcast in terms of I just really want to be part of the conversation that's going on out there in terms of change.
Well, and if I might add, I think that in particular, you know, your personal voice is a better medium for you than, you know, written on a page. You know, you do much better speaking to people directly. You know, that's kind of your modus operandi, is that, you know, your voice is a part of it. So that's why I thought that this podcast was a great idea for you. But on that subject,
and I'm going to come back to that topic when I interview you.
Oh, okay. But another thing that I actually had written down before the millennials came up was, it's been millennials who are very much a big part of your focus of this. And I'm wondering why millennials? Like, what has interested you so very much about them, and why do you want to reach them so very much?
Right. Well, two things about that. One thing is that since we've started this podcast, I've definitely gotten some pushback from friends and listeners who are strangers who've come up to me and said, you know, you talk a lot about reaching millennials, but we're out there listening too. Don't ignore us, in terms of the whole Gen X generation and also baby boomers. And so I think I was a little bit wrong in the beginning in thinking that it was mostly millennials who were listening. But in terms of reaching them, They are such a powerful, important generation. And they're a much bigger generation than the Gen X generation that's in between. I'm a baby boomer. And because they're such a gigantic generation, and because also I think that they grew up in a time of tremendous technology, that this whole, you know, social media and everything that's happened in the last couple of decades, they had it from the crib in terms of, you know, it being intuitive to them. They're very, very different. They're very powerful. They're much more open, I think, to change, and they're activists in a way that we haven't seen in a long time.
Definitely. Well, and so, and we do generalize, you know, and say millennials, but I think it's fair to say that we're not just talking to millennials or baby boomers. You know, everybody's encompassed. We've had plenty of Gen Xers on the show.
And we've had men on the show. Yeah. I mean, we don't want this to only be about women. I mean, men are obviously a important part of this conversation.
Yes.
But this is about women in power.
Yeah. Well, and so as a boomer or as somebody from an older generation, what do you think the younger generations think of boomers who are largely in power right now, who are making most of the decisions lately? Like, what do you think the younger generations see boomers as? And what do you want them to see you as?
Wow. Well, for one thing, I don't agree that boomers have most of the power right now. I mean, I see boomers dying, and I see them retiring, and I see them really like moving off center stage. And obviously, and I see the Gen X generation, that next generation, you know, having, and clearly, I mean, if you look at Congress, you know, I mean, there are boomers and older who've been there like 30 years or so. And so, but across all the different spectrums, let's just say. So I think the Gen X's are really moving in there and having a lot of power right now. But also the millennials are getting power faster than baby boomers ever did.
Well, and that probably has a lot to do with what you said about us being a very, very large generation.
And you've been told from the time you were very, very young by baby boomer parents, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. You can be anything. And a lot of you believe that, and we want you to believe that. And you're shocked when you run into some of the problems that are out there, but it's still true. And I guess in terms of what I want millennials to think about baby boomers, I think sometimes you have felt that I felt as if you and maybe other younger women didn't appreciate enough what I did and my generation of women did. I don't think that I really feel that we need a whole lot of appreciation, but it always discouraged me that I never wanted to see women squatting on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted them to jump up and go faster than we did.
Yeah. Well, so in regards to millennials having been told that they could be anything, and now there's a lot of pushback from millennials because we're inheriting the world, and it's not what we envisioned, I guess. And I think a lot of that has created this strange rift between generations. It's become sort of the older generations thinking one thing and the younger generations thinking another, and it's created a bunch of, you know, misanthropy between the generations, I believe. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that millennials are deeply in debt because of colleges. So I had a couple statistics that I took from bestwork.com. Millennials, you know, grew up being told, like, we could do anything. You know, we could have anything. And now what we're facing is $1.3 trillion in student loan debt in the country in general, which is actually 2.5 times more what was owed only 10 years earlier.
Wow.
So basically, I guess my question is, there's a little bit of animosity happening between generations right now and taking control of the government. And do you think that this gap of our experiences is detrimental to us? And how do we, like, repair that kind of a gap?
Wow. That's a big question, and I think that whole issue of what college has cost your generation versus what it cost my generation is incredible, mm-hmm. and it's horrifying to me. And the amount of debt that you are carrying is horrifying to me. And I personally think that we as a society, including the government, really have to address that in some ways. No question about it. And I think that the banks have really taken advantage of students in terms of the rates and things that they've charged. But that's a whole other big question. But well, go ahead.
Well, so another thing that we've talked about is Bernie Sanders. You and I have spoken about this before because initially I was a Bernie supporter. I did end up voting for Hillary, which I have never regretted. But a lot of millennials in particular were very enamored with his message. And I know you were always an avid Hillary fan. Why do you think it is that millennials were so attracted to Bernie Sanders' message?
Well, I think part of it was he said, you know, like wipe out student debt, you know? Well, that was great, except that was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Even if he became president, he wasn't capable of delivering on that. And so it was a little fantasy a bit. And I think that was part of my discouragement about that was a feeling of the so many millennials supporting ideas that they didn't really have the experience or the background yet to understand why that was just a false hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, and his message in retrospect did look a little bit more like a pipe dream to many people, but how do you think Hillary could have catered a little bit better to millennials who are in like crippling debt, who are having so much trouble making our way in a world where it seems like everybody else was already an adult at this point, you know, and we all feel like we're still teenagers here.
Well, I guess I don't really want to go back and sort of decipher again or think again through that whole campaign because how Hillary could have done it because, I mean, Donald Trump certainly didn't didn't deliver on that, and he's our president now.
So I guess my real question is, what are our baby boomers, our Gen Xers, our older generations than millennials doing to include us more? You know, we have this huge gap in our experiences. We have, you know, people who are baby boomers who are 25 who owned a house by now. And we have millennials who are in their 30s and living with their parents. So we have this huge gap, and millennials are in trouble. We're scared. We don't have an adult life like everybody else before us did. And it feels like we're arguing over border walls and stuff like that. Like, how do we bring these things together? You've had so much experience in politics with Hillary Clinton and all of this stuff. So why is it that millennials still feel so alienated that we would turn to somebody who's giving us pipe dreams as opposed to an experienced politician?
Wow. Well, that's a really powerful question. And I think there's two parts to it. I mean, one is what are the millennials themselves going to do? I mean, part of the American promise is work hard and go after it and you can achieve, you know? And I think a big part of it is what are millennials going to do to fix this problem? And I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing something about it too, but a big thing is for them to vote. You know, number one is for them to vote and to become politically active and to understand the issues and to get out there and work hard to support political leaders who are going to address these problems, not with big promises, but with the experience and a plan and the ability to actually deliver and make some progress on this. You know, the middle class in the United States is being destroyed right now. And so it's not only, you know, millennials, your next generation that was hoping to begin having at least a middle class kind of security by this point in your lives or beginning of it. That's not happening. And so you're at a time in history that's dramatically different from the challenges that my generation fought. We were in the midst, when I was your age, we were in the midst of the Vietnam War, the civil rights fights, the beginnings of the women's movement. And so those problems were just as serious as the ones that you're facing now. And we needed help from all the generations, but we had to lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that your generation needs to collectively raise your voice and use your collective power to move our country forward and address these things for you.
How would you compare what is happening right now with millennials, Gen Xers, and, you know, beyond, to what happened in your generations? Like you mentioned the women's movement, and now we've had the Me Too movement.
Right.
You've mentioned race, and now we've had all of these issues with law enforcement and race.
Yeah.
And things like the border, this caravan nonsense. And so how do you think these things compare, and how do you think each generation dealt with it accordingly?
Well, I think that there always is conflict in human nature, in human evolution. You know, there's always going to be problems, no question about it. And, you know, I'm sure we'll never live in a time of, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to all human beings. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, there's always these problems. But the only thing that I feel is that I just want people to be awake, to educate themselves, to educate themselves with actual facts,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be very, very smart about this vetting information and being courageous and stepping forward and not waiting for others to do it. And that's probably why I do this podcast. It's why Kevin says to me, Mom, why do you work so hard? You know, why? You know, at your time in your life, why don't you just kick back and play golf? Because all these issues bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm deeply concerned about them.
Are you at all concerned that younger generations appear to be fighting for almost the same things that you fought for?
Well, I think we've made progress on those issues. You know, we're not in exactly the same place. I mean, I think the big issues, wars, who are our leaders, how we treat others as human beings, I think those issues are always going to be with us, but I see us making some progress, and I certainly don't want us to give up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I think it's my turn.
Yeah.
Wow, you have asked some amazing questions. And I was going to take a very different tact with you, because I want to really understand more about what makes Monica tick. And things that I know about you, I mean, I've obviously known you from the time you were a baby, but here you are now, 29 years old, and you have a college degree in film
cinema.
And communication.
Cinema, yes.
In cinema. You speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I think, would define yourself as a feminist.
Yes.
I think you might also define yourself as a rebel, particularly related to gender stereotypes.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. So what would that foundation, just give us a little sense of who you are today, and maybe what are the things that you've discovered about yourself at this point? Because our lives, I mean, we're always sort of discovering who we are, the talents that we were born with, and how to put them to use. So what have you found out about yourself at this point?
Well, and also I found out a lot about myself in the course of doing this podcast.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been forced to think about things a little harder than, you know, just a Facebook post about it and stuff like that. But I think to start with, you mentioned feminism. There was this weird moment briefly where it was being vilified for a while, the term feminism. So 100% consider myself a feminist, unapologetically. And I think going through that is something that me and my generation really had to work through, you know. The gender movement, the sexuality movement is very important to me. I think I've experienced it from the day I was born. You know, I always wanted to run around with the guys, and it I received back push from it.
You remember from a really young age? Really, like, do you have early memories, like one of the earliest defining moments of the light bulb going, like, I don't like this?
Yeah. Well, I think one of my biggest moments of realizing that I was an outlier in that regard was I attended a Catholic school in third grade, and we had uniforms. The girls wore jumpers and the boys wore pants and shirts, and I didn't want to wear a jumper, so I wore pants and shirts. And I was one of maybe two girls in the whole school who wore the pants and shirt uniform. I also had my hair cut short, and, you know, as a third grader, I looked exactly like a little boy.
Uh-huh.
100%.
And that was your doing. You fought for that, and your mom and dad were cool with that?
Yeah. Well, I've been cutting my hair short most of my life. Whether it was doing it myself in the bathroom to my parents' dismay, or, you know, just finally having them break down and be like, okay, fine, we'll cut your hair short however you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop cutting it yourself in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Were you trying to look like a boy?
I don't think I had gender in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't trying to look like a boy. I was just trying to look the way I liked to look. I was trying to dress comfortably. I certainly can't run around in a jumper with my skirt flying around and, you know, tackle people on the playground.
And cold in the winter.
And cold, you know, wind blowing up your skirt and stuff like that. I wasn't into that. But I could run around in pants, and I could, you know, play rough in pants. And I was just comfortable that way. And even as a kid, I just remember it wasn't, I want to be a boy. It was, I like the way that looks. I like the way this looks on me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable in this outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't have anything to do with gender for me. It was my interests.
So as you've moved along here, you mentioned the gender movement. When mm-hmm. when you throw that out there, what do you think of?
I think of this break in traditional gender roles. You know, for a long time in this country, you know, men have had a role and women have had a role. And women have fought for their right to not fit into a box. And now my generation is saying, wait a minute, women are fighting to get out of their box, but now you're just making more boxes to put people in. Mm. So it's like, oh, well, if you're not a happy housewife, then you're a radical feminist. You know, if you're a girl who likes to wear boys' clothes, then you're this. And it's like, no, I'm just me. And my generation is getting a lot better at that. We're allowing people to explore their personal gender. We're allowing people to say, hey, I don't feel right in this body. I want to be in the body that I feel comfortable in. I don't feel right in a jumper. I don't want to wear a jumper. I want to wear pants. And I shouldn't have to explain myself to people in order to be happy.
Mm-hmm. And do you still find a lot of pushback in the culture?
Yeah, there's almost like these cells of thought. And within your own cell of thought, you're comfortable. But if you, you know, walk out into the world, into somebody else's cell of thought, then suddenly it is different. And I think one thing that's important to me and my generation is a molding of these cells of thought.
Or melding.
Melding, yes.
Yeah, right, right. Well, another really important experience that you've had in your life that is unusual is that when you were very, very young, how old were you? Dad took that opportunity to move to Venezuela, take a job in Venezuela, Caracas, Venezuela, and your mom and dad both jumped at it.
Yep.
So how, living in another country like that and learning to speak another second language as a very young child, how do you think that has impacted you?
Massively. I am very grateful for that experience. It wasn't until I was 18 years old that I realized most people don't have a passport. Most people haven't been out of the state that they were born in, let alone the country.
Most Americans.
Yes. I didn't realize that until I was much, much older. Mm-hmm. And it came
you
as
You thought
like,
it was kind of normal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I thought people were born with a passport like they were born with a birth certificate. You know, I thought everybody just had one because I always had one. But beyond that, experiencing other culture as such a young kid was a very valuable experience to me and my brother, and I think my mom and my dad as well, because I got to be a minority in the country I was in. I got to see things from a different perspective. You know, I got people telling me things like, can I stare into your eyes because they're blue? Can I touch your hair because it's soft? You know, so I got to experience.
Because you were a blonde, blue-eyed, yes, Irish child.
Freckles, yeah, the whole nine yards. Sunburn.
Yeah, right.
So I got to experience that, and I think it's a really valuable experience that a lot of people are lacking nowadays. Is experiencing, you know, stepping out of their cell of thought, stepping outside of a world of all blonde hair, blue eyes, freckled white people, you know, and maybe experiencing something new.
You got that at a very young age.
I got that at a very young age, and I was very lucky.
Right. Well, another really big piece of your big personality is sports.
Yeah.
And I know that you love sports, know a lot about sports, and particularly hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So when was it that you caught the bug?
So we've always called our family a hockey family. I have a very early memory. I must have been like 2 or 2.5. My dad came home from hockey. My brother hadn't been born yet.
Wow.
So it was very young.
Yeah.
My dad came home from hockey and took his gear to the basement, and the whole basement smelled like sweat. And I said, it's the daddy smell. And I remember my parents laughing. And
interesting.
Yeah, you know, and so that's probably one of my earliest memories, you know, going to my dad's softball games, going to my dad's hockey games and cheering. Mm-hmm. My mom always liked hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And skating was always an important thing in our family. And for a long time, I figure skated because I thought that was what I was supposed to do.
Right.
You know, boys play hockey, girls figure skate. But that didn't last long.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
And now you've played hockey,
yep,
and you teach hockey.
And I teach hockey. Everything I do is hockey almost.
Mm-hmm.
But I think catching the bug was more of like a just natural thing. I was always pretty scrappy. I always liked being active. And my parents nurtured that in me. You know, my dad saw that I wanted to play sports and eventually forced me... literally forced me to go out for the high school hockey team.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I didn't want to do it because I was a teenager and, you know, standing up was embarrassing.
Wow.
When you're a teenager,
they force you to do that, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He made me go. I was horrified, but it was the best thing he's ever done for me. I loved it, and I've been playing hockey ever since. But even before that, I've been a fan. It's part of my family. It's
yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, talking about you being active, that's a part of you, is that one of my favorite memories of you is that, as you know, I'm a horsewoman, mm-hmm, and I've been a rider all my life, still am. And from a very young age, you would, when you came to visit me and I had horses at my house, you would get up on Winchester, mm-hmm, with me and I'd put you in the front. And it wasn't enough for you to, you know, just canter around in the pasture. You saw those jumps and you would say to me,
jump.
Shump. Shump. No, shump.
Shump.
Shump, AJ. Shump.
Shump.
And we did. Right. Well, just a couple more questions. And so why did you decide to do this podcast with me?
Well, initially, you know, I was just kind of a tech person, you know, helping you out with some
That's right.
The info because my degree was in cinema, which, you know, included audio and visual stuff.
And editing.
Yeah, and editing. And so it was just kind of an experiment where, you know, I would come over and, you know, work on stuff. I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do with jobs and things like that. And then as you and I kind of bounced off of each other, it became something new, whatever it is. It became this hybrid almost.
Right, right. Well, and that I wanted to reach millennials, mm-hmm, and actually, once again, Kevin played a role in that. He's like, you know, you really ought to have Monica do that with you.
Well, and I think one thing that's been really important to me in being a part of this podcast is that you let me speak my mind. You know, it's your podcast, but you've never not encouraged me to say exactly what I'm thinking, which
well,
I'm
I think
pretty
it's become
at.
Our podcast. Right. Well, I also wanted to ask you about Comic-Con,
uh-huh,
and cosplay.
Yeah.
Is that correct how you say that?
Is it conventions, yeah.
Okay. In terms of dressing up.
Uh-huh. Cosplay.
Cosplay. Yeah, right. Would you explain what that is, anybody who may not know what that is, and why you like it?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because it's something that a lot of people consider like juvenile. But I have a whole group online that I created, you know, of older people who do this because it's just a hobby. You know, some people put chips in bottles. And
yeah, right.
I enjoy sewing and making these costumes, trying to make them accurate, trying to make them different, you know, trying to tailor them to me or my friends. And it's just a fun thing to do, you know. It's something that I think people don't realize is pretty normal. Like, if you're watching a TV show and you see a character that you like wearing a T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
you might want to buy that T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And this is dressing up as comic book characters.
Comic book, TV show, cartoon, not cartoon,
mm-hmm.
any fictional character you want to dress up as.
Mm-hmm. And there, well, it's like these Star Wars conventions,
yes, yeah.
you know. It's, maybe it started with that, I don't
yeah.
know.
Sci-fi,
mm-hmm. yeah. And these conventions have gotten very big. As a matter of fact, we went to
yeah.
one, and we're going to do a podcast about that because I interviewed a whole bunch of really interesting people.
That one was interesting because it was a female-centric one.
Right, right. So last question. What would you like to see included in your life as it evolves, let's just say, over the next 5 years?
I've always wanted to do more of my own media stuff. I've always wanted to make videos about hockey, like teaching hockey in video form, you know, answering questions of people who might not be, who didn't grow up with their dad coming home reeking of hockey, you know.
Uh-huh.
I've wanted to make videos about that. I've wanted to make videos about my cosplay, about, you know, my community of these fantastic nerds that I'm a part of.
Now you've just got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very self-motivated, which is why it's been really nice to do this podcast with you, because I feel like it's inspired me to think about more venues.
Any last thought on what I guess maybe you'd like other generations to understand about your generation that maybe they don't?
I really like that question. So I think what I would really like people to understand about my generation is that we're very aware of who we are inside and putting that on the outside. For a long time, I feel like other generations have been all about what is societally normal, what is societally right. And I feel like my generation has been more about who are you, what makes you feel normal, what makes you feel right, and, you know, don't cage that. Don't have to find a box to put yourself in, make your own box. You know, and that's what we're coming at with, you know, these young people coming into government wearing their red lipstick, and it's such a shocker, but, you know.
Are you referring to Alessandra Octavio Cortez, who
yes.
is exactly your age?
Yes.
And the youngest woman now in Congress.
Yes. And she wore her hoop earrings and red lipstick, and I saw that, and I couldn't help but think, if that isn't just my generation. People told her, maybe don't wear red lipstick, and she was like, no, I'm going to wear red lipstick.
No, I think I will.
I think I will. Thank you very much. And that's my generation. And I'd like
you're going to
understand.
Do it. Well, and you're going to do it your way, as you should.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to our Powering Up podcast, everybody. We hope you'll subscribe and share it with your network. And Monica and I would always love to hear from you through the Powering Up Women Facebook page or at AnnDoyleLDR on Twitter. And our thanks to the Motor City Woman Studios in Metro Detroit and our technical director, KI, where they and we are amplifying the voices of women. And remember, power is the currency for getting things done. That's why getting comfortable with power is essential. Trust yourself and trust your sisters.